You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Sokar Tsarnaev is still at large, the 19-year-old younger brother, White Hat, his older brother dead. There are reports that the police are looking for a few other folks, but apparently not. Well, we don't know. I'm not going to go beyond that. Just, you know, that's the update. At the top of the next hour, Charlie Pierce is going to drop by. He's a journalist with Esquire magazine and a Boston Globe reporter. And at the top of the third hour, Barry Nolan is going to drop by. He's been with us several times, professor of journalism at Boston University, former anchor at WBZ, the legendary WBZ. We will be giving you updates and bringing you updates throughout the program. Anything changes, we'll let you know. So keep your dial right here. All that said, there's a lot of other things going on in Washington, D.C., and around America and around the world. And Senator Bernie Sanders has his finger on the pulse of much, if not all of it. So it's Friday. It's Brunch with Bernie. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. Sanders.Senate.gov, of course, his website. Bernie, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Glad to have you. What's on your list?
Well, obviously, I think no one can ignore or should ignore what's going on in Boston. The tragedy that took place at the Boston Marathon, one of the just great events in our country, and now this business with these two brothers. I think I speak for everybody that we hope that the perpetrators are apprehended as quickly as possible and that there is no loss of life. We've seen enough. And so we hope that comes to an end as soon as possible. Obviously also, as everybody knows, the Congress dealt with guns this week. And on some of the important provisions, including background checks, there was a significant majority, but in the United States Senate, majority does not rule. You need 60 votes. We did not gain 60 votes. I think we had 56 on the issue of background checks, which seems to me just to be a fairly common sense approach to trying to make sure that while you're not going to solve, you know, mass killings overnight, at least we should make every effort to keep guns out of the hands of people who should not have them. So, you know, that was a loss and a disappointing loss, but it also speaks to another issue that we've talked a whole lot about, and that is the need for filibuster reform and not require 60 votes for every important piece of legislation that Congress has to deal with. I suspect that perhaps as soon as next week, the issue of immigration will come to the Senate floor. We will see what happens there. It's a complicated piece of legislation dealing with a number of issues. One of them is, what do we do with 11 million people who are in this country, have worked in this country, but are here without documentation? And I think there is a growing sentiment among the American people that there should be a path towards citizenship for these folks. Many of them are working, many of them are law-abiding, but that they should not be granted amnesty and they should get to the end of the line in terms of citizenship. But it is important, I think, for the country that we take these people out of the shadows, where in many cases they're living in fear and they're being exploited economically. The other part of the issue, which doesn't get quite the attention that I think deserves, has to do with guest worker programs, which is also under the rubric of the immigration bill. And what that's about is that in this country, legally, there are large numbers of folks who come to do work that ostensibly American employers cannot find Americans to do. I think in some cases that's true, in some cases that's not true. So it's a very important issue. And I think what you want out of that, and what I'm working on, is to enable employers to be able to find those categories of workers where, in fact, you can't find American workers. And I think in agriculture, I was some years ago involved with tomato workers in Immokalee, Florida. And all of that work is done by foreign labor, virtually all of it. And it is hard work. It is work where wages are not particularly good. And a lot of workers there are being exploited, in some cases exploited ruthlessly. So how you create a mechanism for those folks to be living and working in this country legally is what we're working on, and not be exploited and have legal rights is a very important issue. Now, the negative of all of this is that it is clear to me that there are some employers who really are not reaching out to immigrants because they can't find American labor, but simply to bring in workers who will work for lower wages and push down the wage scale, and that's going on as well. So we want to be careful that that does not happen. We want to be careful that when there are jobs that Americans can do, and most of these jobs Americans can do. I remember some years ago, I think it was ExxonMobil, using welders, as I recall, from India, I believe, because they quote-unquote couldn't find American welders. Well, I don't believe that for a second. So how you draw that balance where you do not bring in people to be exploited to drive down wages and take jobs away from Americans is important. On the other hand, where there are gaps where employers legitimately cannot find American workers, how we address that. So that's an important part of the immigration situation. The ongoing debate over the budget deficit reduction, you and I have talked about that on many occasions. In my view, the deficit clearly was caused by two wars that were unpaid for, Iraq and Afghanistan that Bush got us into, huge tax breaks for the wealthy, other programs unpaid for, and also the Wall Street-caused recession, which has resulted in a significant decline in revenue coming in to our to the coffers, Treasury Department, as a percentage of GDP. We're now at about the lowest point that we've been in some 60 years. Our Republican friends think that the only solution to this problem, which is what the Ryan budget in the House is all about, is to cut everything, to cut to end Medicare as we know it, massive cuts in Medicaid, in education, in nutrition programs, heating programs. I think that that's totally absurd. At a time when we have so much income and wealth inequality in this country, the wealthy are doing phenomenally well. Corporations are enjoying record-breaking profits. CEOs are now making something like 350 times what their workers are making. I do not believe that you balance the budget on the backs of the elderly, the children, the sick, or the lowest-income people in this country. Unfortunately, in some of these areas, President Obama has really done pretty much what the Republicans have wanted, and that is especially in this business of cuts in Social Security and benefits for disabled vets through a so-called chain CPI. I think that that is morally unacceptable, and I think it's just very bad economics. But the president has brought that forward and offered that as a compromise that the Republicans are prepared to raise some revenue. I think it's a bad idea, and I won't support it under any circumstance, but certainly as a bargaining position for a Democratic president who is supposed to be representing the middle class to bring forth voluntarily an offer to cut Social Security and veterans programs that raise premiums on Medicare does not make any sense to me at all. So we're working hard against that proposal. And, you know, I just actually am in St. Johnsbury, Vermont, speaking to, you know, we just did a town meeting with seniors, and we had just a wonderful turnout. And I think what I saw here is true all over the country. When you talk to seniors, so many of them are hurting. They're living on $12,000, $13,000, $15,000 a year. Social Security is just either all or almost all of their income. And it's just very, very unfair when these folks are faced with high prescription drug costs, high health care costs, high heating costs. You shouldn't be balancing the budget on their backs.
Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. We'll keep you up to date on what's going on in Boston throughout the program. So far, no changes in the situation. Police are still looking for the second, the younger suspect, Zokhar Tsarnaev. But we'll be back with more of Senator Sanders. Your calls for Bernie right after this. Stick around.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And be sure to check out Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov. You can sign up for the Bernie Buzz, and it's always a great news source. Twenty minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. No change.
Can I continue that thought?
Certainly, Senator Sanders.
And so I think what Paul was asking about, how come, you know, the media wasn't talking about filibuster?
Well, if you could reset the question, Bernie, because some people didn't hear the question.
Yeah, we had a caller from Michigan, I think, who asked about, you know, media coverage of the gun debate. And there was not a lot of reference to a Republican filibuster, which is what it was. If my memory is correct, I think we ended up with 56 votes, and maybe Reid changed his vote so he could bring it up again later. But that's a pretty good majority who wanted stronger background checks. We lost. We lost with 56 votes. And most people say that's pretty strange. You know, usually majority wins, but not in the Senate. This was a Republican filibuster. There were some Democrats who did not vote for stronger background checks. I think that there were four or five. But virtually all Republicans did not vote for it. So this was very clearly a Republican filibuster, an overwhelming Republican opposition to strong background checks, period. That's what it is. And what Paul was saying is the media did not report it that way, and I think he's pretty much right.
Yeah, I found myself yelling at the TV, why don't you use the word filibuster? Why don't you point out?
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Denise in Claremont, California, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, Senator Sanders. We all know that the budget the president put forth is a bad budget because of cuts to Social Security. Can't you, as a senator, stop that, veto it?
Well,
isn't there something you can do as a senator without having to vote on it?
To answer your question, we are working very, very hard on it. And one way I worked on it as a member of the budget committee, the way it works is, as you know, the House presents a budget. The House budget was written by Congressman Paul Ryan of Wisconsin, who's chairman of the budget committee there. It was a disastrous budget. He moved to make savage cuts in Medicare, Medicaid, education, nutrition programs, every program of relevance to ordinary Americans. That's the House budget. And without asking for a nickel of new revenue from the wealthiest people of the largest corporations, I'm on the Senate Budget Committee, and we presented a budget. Didn't go as far as I wanted to go, but was an infinitely better budget than the Ryan budget and a lot better budget than the president's budget. And it did require a substantial amount, almost $1 trillion worth of new revenue coming from the closing of corporate loopholes. One out of four corporations pays nothing in taxes. We're losing just about $100 billion every year by corporations taking advantage of tax havens in the Cayman Islands or Bermuda, etc. So we addressed that issue, and we did not touch Social Security at all. No cuts in Social Security or benefits for disabled vets. So we are working hard now. The president's budget, Denise, is just a proposal. That's all it is. It's not law. And the debate goes on. And obviously I'm going to work as hard as I can for a budget that asked those people who are earning huge amounts of money to stop paying their fair share, those corporations who are paying nothing, to stop paying their fair share of taxes. And at the same time, we're going to protect working families, the elderly and the disabled, and those people who are hurting.
Pete in Georgetown, Texas, watching on Free Speech TV on Dish Network. You are on the air, Pete, with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Senator Sanders. You're very much my hero. And I'm wondering, can criminal charges be filed against the owners of the West Texas fertilizer plant? The place was just about blown off the map, and the casualties keep rising.
Terrible, terrible. I mean, you know, what a week it's been. We've had Boston, and we've had West Texas. The answer is, Pete, I think you're just going to have to, we're going to have to wait and see what the cause of that that terrible explosion was. So I think we can't talk about bringing charges until we know what caused it. But certainly if there was a dereliction in responsibility and safety standards, that is something absolutely that should be and must be looked at.
Okay. Lee in Las Vegas, Nevada, you are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, Mr. Sanders. I'm a very big fan of yours. And I need to ask you a question that really no one has really brought up. And this really irks me. It's about, you know, the tragedy that happened in Texas. Okay. All of a sudden, Mr. Perry, the hypocrite, right? Here he is when we had that disaster, Sandy. He's up rousing. I don't know how we're going to pay for it, this and that. He votes no, right? What does he do? A day after the disaster? We need money, he says. Is that not a hypocrite or what, Mr. Sanders? All of a sudden, he needs money and he wants it right away, Mr. Sanders. But meanwhile, the people, those poor people of Hurricane Sandy had to do all that waiting, and they had to be embarrassed into getting the money. What do you think about that, Mr.
Well, what I think is, I have to tell you, Lee, I've been preoccupied with some other issues, and I have not followed Governor Perry on this issue.
I can just fill you in, Bernie,
yeah.
Real quickly.
Yeah.
He came out today and asked, or maybe late yesterday afternoon, and specifically asked the president to expedite emergency aid to Texas for this bond.
That's what Lee is talking about.
And he had, and when Sandy was being debated, he, in a press conference, referred to it as pork.
Yep. I guess hypocrisy is the right word, Lee.
Yeah.
Look, here's what the issue is. We are a nation, and we're a nation in which Vermont is one of the states, and Texas is one of the states, and Massachusetts is one of the states. And when disaster strikes, whether it is an earthquake in California or a tornado in Missouri or a terrible floods in Vermont or a tragedy in Massachusetts or a tragedy in Texas, we should respond, according to the law, as a nation, coming together to help communities that have been ravaged by disaster. Right-wing Republicans, and that, by the way, has been a fundamental concept of how we function as a government and as a people for many, many decades. And recently, right-wing Republicans like Rick Perry have moved away from that. We can't afford to do this. We shouldn't do this. Or if we do it, we have to cut education or Medicare and Medicaid before we can provide disaster relief. But when it strikes home, suddenly I guess it becomes a different issue and they want immediate help. So clearly this is an example of outrageous hypocrisy.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Back with more of Brunch with Bernie right after this. The situation in Boston still the same as it was just a few minutes ago. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 34 minutes past the hour. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour here on Friday on the Tom Hartman Program. No current updates on what's going on in Boston. The situation is still stable or unstable or whatever you would call that. They're still looking for the young man, Dzhokhar Tsarnaev, the 19-year-old. His brother, his older brother, 26-year-old old brother, is dead. And, we'll keep you up to date on things. Senator Sanders with us. Bernie, you're still here, right?
I'm right here, Tom.
Okay, great. So let's pick up some phone calls here on things having to do with, well, here, this is a great one. Scott in Rockford, Illinois, listening on WCPT. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, Senator Sanders, I really appreciate everything you do. My question, is there, to try to, clarify all this spin that you hear from different, Republicans and Democrats and everything else, is there a website out there that shows the bill that is introduced into Congress and how everyone votes on it?
Sure.
You know, whether it's the Senate or the House?
Yeah.
I mean, people need to know.
The answer is absolutely yes. There is a website out there, I think it's under Thomas of the United States Congress, where you can track every piece of legislation offered. And as you know, thousands and thousands of pieces of legislation are offered, and relatively few of them are actually voted on. And you can also find the votes that are cast on that on any bill that gets to the floor of the House of the Senate.
And the website, just for reference, is named after Thomas Jefferson. It's thomas.loc, as in locate.gov. I beg your pardon? It's the LOC, as in Library of Congress. Yeah, so it's thomas.loc.gov.gov.
Yeah, and it's a good website, and you can learn a lot about legislation. You can read the entire bill, the summaries of the bill, and so forth.
Gene in Alachua. I know I'm mispronouncing that. Gene in Florida?
Alachua.
Okay, there you go. You're on the air with Bernie.
Okay, my question for Senator Sanders is that there's ever, if he had ever considered any possibility of a national ticket that involved himself and Senator Warren, and to let him know if that was a possibility, myself and several of my friends would resign our jobs and work full-time for him.
That's very kind of you. Running for national office is a huge responsibility, and somebody with my politics would run into incredible opposition from corporate America and all of the big money interests, and we'd have problems with the media, and you have to raise a huge amount of money. So at the moment, at least, let me just say this. It's a very generous compliment that you're offering me, and but right now I am very content being and very proud to be the U.S. Senator from the state of Vermont.
Stephen, in Monterey, Tennessee, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Tom and Bernie, it's a pleasure to speak to two people with integrity and concern for the American people. I have just one simple question. When are the Democrats and those philosophers like you going to use the word entitlements instead of, stop using entitlements versus using earned benefits as a term?
I don't use the word entitlements. I mean, I don't describe Social Security or Medicare as an entitlement. I think it is an earned benefit. But what is most important, and, Stephen, you raise, the really important issue, the philosophical issue now of where we are as a nation. What do we believe? Some of our right-wing Republicans, and sadly enough, the Republican Party has become essentially a right-wing party, hold the view that people are not, should not be entitled as a right to health care or to retirement benefits in a significant way. And that is, my view, is very different. I believe that what the struggle of the last 70, 80 years has been all about is rights, is to guarantee that when people get old, they're at least going to have a solid and strong source of revenue in order to live with dignity. And Social Security has never missed paying out one benefit in the last 70 plus years. It is a guaranteed retirement program. And in 65, in the mid-60s, we established Medicare and Medicaid programs which have helped tens and tens of millions of people. I just was in a meeting literally 2 hours ago where a fellow who was a veteran and a senior got up and he said, I just came back from the hospital. I was diagnosed with leukemia. I had major surgery. I was in the hospital for a period of time. Estimate the bill was $250,000 in between my veterans benefits and TRICARE and Medicare. It didn't cost us anything. If we take seriously that all of us are equal, that it is not only people who have a whole lot of money that can get good quality health care, but every person is entitled to health care. If we take seriously the fact that every kid who grows up in this country has the potential to be, a scientist or an engineer or a businessman or a teacher or can do great things with his or her life, then we've got to make sure that that kid gets that quality education regardless of income. So the debate that we are facing right now is not only the immediate attacks on Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid, and they were devastated. Medicare and Medicaid devastated in the Ryan budget, and the president has tragically come forward with this so-called chain CPI for Social Security and benefits for disabled vets. We've got to fight that. But more importantly, we have got to create a nation which says that all of our people are entitled to certain rights, and the right is to live with dignity. You don't live with dignity, in my view, unless you have certain economic protections. You're not living in dignity if you're unemployed and you don't have enough food to eat. You're not living in dignity if you're sick and you can't get the health care that you need. And the truth of the matter is, we can do all of those things. You can provide health care to people. You can provide nutrition to people. You can provide quality education to people. You can do these in cost-effective ways. But to do those things, we really need major, major political changes in this country, and we have to take on, which was what this whole question was about, an ideology, a Republican ideology, which says that if you are sick, you shouldn't be able to get government help in terms of health care and education. And obviously that's something that I strongly disagree with.
Gerald in Belafonte, Pennsylvania. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I really like you guys. Senator Sanders, President Obama's been given the Republicans like a carrot of lowering our inflation adjustment for Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we should go back to where it was before Reagan. He should have put that on the table instead of what he did.
Well, let me tell you something. Just to give you an example of just something that happened just a few days ago. This whole issue of how you determine what an appropriate cost of living adjustment for a person is not so easy, if you think about it. And the reason it's complicated and not so easy is if you are an 18-year-old right now, you spend a certain sum of money. The products that you buy, which may be an iPad or if you have the money, or some other type of cell phone, or, you know, some computer games, the prices for those products may in fact be lower than they were a year ago. For you, inflation is minimal or maybe has gone down for what you buy. On the other hand, if you are 80 years old and living in northern Vermont and you don't have a whole lot of money, how are you spending your money? Well, you're spending it on prescription drugs because when you get old, you get sick. You're spending it on health care. You're spending it on trying to keep your home warm in the wintertime. That's how you spend a lot of your money, spending it on food. In all of those areas, prescription drugs, health care, heating, food, costs have gone up. For an 18-year-old, they may have gone down. So to my view, and I speak, many economists will say, tell you the same thing. The way we determine COLAs for Social Security today probably underestimates what seniors are spending, that we should adjust the COLA upwards, not downwards. And what the so-called chain CPI does is it cuts it and makes it stingier. So that if you're 65 today, by the time you're 75, you would lose in that 75th year about $650 compared to what you otherwise would have gotten. So that's my view on that. And we are looking hard at trying to create a separate index for seniors, which I think will end up being more generous than the current. And certainly we're going to oppose everything we can to defeat this change to CPI, which is absolutely unfair to seniors and disabled vets.
Yeah. Bernie, about 30 seconds of the break. Should we have a separate one also for disabled vets?
Well, I think we could take a look at how, you know, disabled vets, if you're disabled, in terms of many disabilities, you are going to be spending money by definition on health care as well.
Mm-hmm.
So if health care costs are going up, you're probably not getting as much as you should. If healthcare costs tomorrow go down, you may be getting too much. But what we want to do is find out exactly what groups, whether you're seniors or disabled, are actually spending. And I can tell you absolutely that when seniors did not get any COLA, two out of the last 4 years, this COLA is not too generous, that's for sure.
Senator Bernie Sanders with us, taking your calls here on our Brunch with Bernie Hour on the Tom Hartman Program, our national town hall meeting with Senator Bernie Sanders. Check out his website at sanders.senate.gov.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit tomhartman.com for audio and video archives.
When you're there, be sure to sign up for his newsletter, The Bernie Buzz. I get it. It's a great source of information. Well, I often share the stuff with you here on the air. Welcome back. 10 minutes before the hour. The situation in Boston continues at they're still searching for this young man, this 19-year-old who is on the lam. We will, at the top of the hour, have journalist Charlie Pierce with Esquire and the Boston Globe. I'm sorry? Oh, okay. Well, we'll have a more detailed news report at the top of the hour. In any case, Charlie's going to be with us Monday. But back with Brunch with Bernie, Senator Bernie Sanders here on the line with us. Joyce in Deer Lodge, Montana. You are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Thank you, Tom, for taking my call. I have to laugh. You stumbled a little bit over my town.
Yeah.
Anyway, first of all, thank you for this program. I've just recently started watching it. I didn't even know it existed. I'd never heard of it before. And I love I love free speech.
Yeah.
And I want to ask, I'm sitting here looking at Bernie on the TV. I want to compliment you, Senator Sanders. You're right up there with my favorite politician, and that was Mike Mansfield.
Mm-hmm. So your question, Joyce.
I don't have admiration for very many of our congressmen or women. But what I want, my main question for you, Senator, is I was very upset. Well, I'm going to explain a little bit. Very upset when Tom announced, I believe it was last week, that the Senate had voted, or the Congress had voted, I guess Senate had voted. The entire body voted that it was all right for the congressman to have insider trading information. And when I first learned about it, when I came out during one of the campaigns, I was just appalled. So do you believe that there are American citizens who are above the law?
No, I don't. And to the best of my knowledge, Joyce, we dealt with that issue last year. And made it illegal for any, not only member of Congress, but staffer to utilize inside trading information. So I think that's an issue that came up, my recollection is last year, and I think it was dealt with and passed.
Glenn in Cary, Illinois. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Is this Glenn? Did you ask for Glenn?
Yep.
Okay, I lost you there. Hey, hi, Senator. I have a question for you. Can you kindly explain what happened to the filibuster? If I recall, after the fall election, Senator Reid was on cable news, network news, very irate, very verbalizing on how the Republicans have held legislation hostage, and I hear you repeating and Tom repeating the same thing. And my layman's understanding is at the beginning of every Senate, majority leader has an opportunity to change the rules, not the constitutional rules, I understand that, but change the rules. And I haven't heard a report what happened, and now here we are in April, and everybody's still complaining about the Republicans not abiding by filibuster. Did Mr. Reid drop the ball, or did the Senate drop the ball?
Here's what happened, Glenn. I think your description of the situation is accurate. You know, there are some rules and laws that we abide by that are in the Constitution, how many United States senators there are and how many members of the House and all that. But the rules of each body are determined by the members themselves. They're not in the Constitution. Some years back, it required 67 votes to override a filibuster. And during the whole civil rights debate, that went down to 60. So could it go down from 60 and end that completely to make it 51 votes carries? The answer is absolutely. You're also correct in stating that there was a lot of discussion about this issue when the session began. And I can tell you, having been in many meetings, caucus meetings, this issue was raised hot and heavy. I think what Majority Leader Reid ended up concluding is, number one, he might not have the votes, as I recall, to go forward. Not everybody in the Democratic caucus supported that, and the Republicans certainly were not going to support it. So he had 55 votes, and I'm not sure that he thought that he would have over 51 votes to make that happen. But having said that, there's a debate about this, but there are at least some people who think that you can change the rules midterm as well, that it doesn't have to be right at the beginning of the session. And I can tell you that there is growing frustration, not only over this gun debate, but in many other areas where the Republicans are filibustering, delaying, preventing judges. We have a very serious problem, and something as mundane in making sure that we have judges staffing districts all over this country. And the Republicans have delayed that. Many vacancies out there. Obama's appointments to important departments being delayed. So there is concern, and I voted against the agreement. The agreement that was reached had some improvements. It allows the Senate to move a little bit faster, but it did not deal with the real question, and that is whether you need 60 votes or 51 votes to carry. And I voted against that proposal because it just didn't go far enough, and I believe at the end of the day you need 51 votes to carry.
Bernie, we have about a minute and a half. Not quite enough time to bring another caller in. Thoughts on the week and as we go forward?
Well, obviously, it has been, a difficult week for this country in terms of the Boston Marathon and the tragedy there, and then what's happening literally right now on the streets of Boston. A police officer killed last night, and just makes all of us shake our heads about what kind of world we live in when people can do these types of things. But I think as American citizens, we've got to keep our eyes focused on where we want to go, which is not only dealing with terrorism in this country and around the world, but creating a nation in which all of our people can live with dignity. And one of the things that always concerns me, Tom, is how easy it is for folks inside the Beltway who are surrounded by a whole lot of moneyed folks who themselves earn good salaries to forget that there are millions and millions of people, some of whom are listening to this show right now, who don't have a job, who are really struggling to put bread on the table or to take care of their kids. And we as a nation can do much better. So I think the message is that we've got to pay attention to what's going on. We've got to be involved. We've got to fight for what we believe in and create the kind of nation that we all know that we can become.
Thank you, Senator. Thanks so much for being with us.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Senator Bernie Sanders, sanders.senate.gov. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And we will have a news update at the top of the next hour. Barry Nolan is going to join us, formerly of WBZ, professor of journalism at Boston University. The situation in Boston is static. It hasn't changed in hours. The younger brother, Zohar Sarnaev, 19 years old, the white hat young man in the photos, is still being sought or perhaps being negotiated with. Who knows? I mean, we just don't know. And it would be inappropriate, I think, for any of the press that did know to be releasing information that might screw up whatever the police are trying to do. And I don't have any of that information, so I'm not in a position to do that anyway. But that's where it's at. What we do know is that his older brother, Tamarian Zarnov, 26 years old, the black hat fellow in the photos, is dead. We know that he's dead. That he had apparently tried to rob last night a convenience store. That the apparently stuff here is all, I mean, you know, multiple news sources, but I'm still going to say apparently. Apparently was wearing explosives or a suicide vest or something like that. Apparently there was at least one more explosive device found in the last 24 hours. Where, under what circumstances, how? I've seen conflicting reports, but perhaps another one of these pressure cooker bombs. And one of the more interesting things that I frankly wouldn't be sharing with you at this point in this investigation were it not all over the internet, and in particular on the Newsweek site, over on the Daily Beast, which is my source for this, a primary source, but it's repeated elsewhere, is that the older brother, the dead older brother, may have been out of the country for as much as 6 months in the last year, and was apparently, and this is based on what appears to be his Facebook page, or appears to be a website of his, a fan of a fundamentalist Muslim sheikh. So this, of course, right, is going to change every. If this turns out to be the case, and I'm just saying this is what I'm reading, this is what I'm seeing. If this turns out to be the case, this is probably going to influence the discussion considerably. The Muslim sheikh has some very, very strong opinions about how destructive Western culture is, how bad it is. For example, you can play the audio out of my computer, can't you, Shano? Okay, let me pot this down a little bit so it doesn't blow out your board. And I think this will probably be this is a YouTube here of just. Let's see here.
And here at J.C. McGill Elementary School in Loganville, where a mother of four, Laura Mallory, believed the Harry Potter series was inappropriate for kids and that she said it promoted witchcraft.
The Harry Potter books are mainstreaming witchcraft to our children. They're presenting it in a child-friendly format that's dangerous and deceptive.
While I'm on the subject.
Okay, so excuse me, that was... school board meeting and, Christian mother who's very upset about Harry Potter. Let me see if I can find the right one. Here's another one. Maybe this is the shake.
The devil goes after the young.
Ah, it sounds like maybe it's him.
Those who cannot fend for themselves. That's why we're trying to help you. We're trying to warn you. And while I'm on the subject, let me say something about Harry Potter. Warlocks are enemies of God. And I don't care what kind of hero they are. They're an enemy of God. And had it been in the Old Testament, Harry Potter would have been put to death.
This sounds more like a woman than the shape. Oh, this is from the Jesus Camp documentary. Excuse me. This is a fundamentalist preacher. Wait a minute. You've got the video, don't you, Jim? It's not rendered. Okay. Well, here, I can just play it from my computer. His name is Faiz Muhammad, and he's talking about how he visited some friends. He's a fundamentalist preacher in Australia. He's Lebanese origin. And he's talking about how he visited a friend's house, and the friend was letting his son watch a Harry Potter movie. And so here he is. This is one of the clips from the that was pointed to by the website of the older brother who died. So, and now it is not playing for me. Rats. You know what's happened? It's over on the Daily Beast, and it must just have so many people hitting it that it's just not running. Can you play any of it, Jim? It start about 40 seconds in is where it. Yeah, you can just play the audio. If you can go 40 seconds in and start from there. Okay? You got it? The point of this, of course, is that this sheikh is making the exact same point that these fundamentalist Christians are making, which is, you know, Harry Potter is the devil. I am concerned about fundamentalism in all of its forms. In all of its forms. Oh, you're bringing your computer over? There we go. It's right under your thumb, isn't it? There we go. Ah, the wonders of live radio, isn't it? Incredible. Okay.
This film. Whatever you think about it, promotes paganism, promotes shirk, promotes evil. Shirk.
Yeah. So in any case, he's going off on this rant about how Harry Potter is promoting paganism and all that kind of thing. If it turns out that, and here's the point of what I wanted to say. If it turns out that there's some realm of Islamic fundamentalism associated with the fellow who is dead, or his brother, or anybody else associated with the Boston bombing, there is going to be all kinds of, you know, rending of garments and gnashing of teeth about Islam. And, I mean, you know, this has happened before. We've seen this movie before. And I think that this might be a good opportunity for us to have a conversation about all forms of religious fundamentalism that lead to violence. Whether it's the murder of abortion doctors, whether it is the incredible levels of intolerance and violence that have been documented by the Southern Poverty Law Center, by white supremacy groups, operating in the name of Christ, whether it is fundamentalist Islam, that this would be actually perhaps a good opportunity for us to have a conversation about modernity versus Bronze Age gods and versus, you know, ancient ways of looking at the world and the use of violence to accomplish ends. Physical violence or psychological violence. So, anyhow, I just tossed that out there. It's perhaps premature, but, you know, it's going to be a long time until Monday, and a lot's going to happen. It's Friday. It's Anything Goes Friday, in fact. So I'll just stop my rant right there, and we'll turn it over to you after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Your thoughts on any topic of the day. 866-987-THO, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. 20 minutes past the hour. One of our callers today, by the way, is going to receive a free signed copy of my book, Rebooting the American Dream, 11 Ways to Rebuild Our Country, brought to you by Stamps.com. Dan McDuffie, former news reporter in Boston, resident of Somerville, Mass., about 5 miles from Watertown, is on the line with us with some insights and a report from what's going on in Boston. Dan, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So what's up?
You know, the city is really, I think, both a scary place and it's, you know, rather eerie today, being stuck in our homes because this is all going on. We've never really experienced anything quite like this, and it's just so strange to see the streets of this and about 6 surrounding communities so empty right now.
Mm-hmm. And what's the latest on the search for Dzhokhar Tsarnaev, if I'm saying this right?
They're still very much focused on Watertown. You know, it's really unclear right now where he may be. I mean, Watertown is where the gun battle was last night. It was very fierce. Explosives were thrown at officers. We know about 15 were wounded. One was killed, you know, as far as the police go. And they're really still concentrating there. But all of us remain on lockdown at this hour while I'm talking to you. Just before I came on the program, they actually sent out a emergency text message that I have never heard before, this alert go off, reminding us all to stay in our homes, and they continue to look for the suspect that's at large. We know he's dangerous, and everybody is very understanding, and we're obeying as best we can.
You got an emergency text message on your cell phone?
I did, and it's not something that came this morning. It's actually just that came this afternoon, and it was from the Mass Emergency Management Association, and they were telling us to remain in our homes. The shelter order remains in effect, and to you know, to continue not to open our doors unless we have uniformed police coming by.
Wow, remarkable. So they
It's extraordinary. There are, you know, anyone who does venture out, the police are kind of stopping them and asking, you know, what are you doing? Where are you going? There were some people that made it to work this morning, and they were allowed to get home, and that's really the only reason people are out right now.
Yeah. And I know there are some people yelling and screaming about, oh, my, you know, rights of freedom of movement are being violated and all this kind of thing. I don't think they're arresting anybody for being on the streets. They're just strongly discouraging people. Do I have that
right? They are. I haven't heard any stories of arrests. I mean, unless they're doing anything suspicious, they might, you know, take them into custody, but then they're being quickly released.
Yeah.
You know, so they can focus their efforts here. There's been a lot of, you know, bomb threats and things in different areas, and you know, they follow up leads as fast as they can get them, and the law enforcement has been just stretched really thin. But I do have to say that they've all been doing a very good job, and we understand that they're trying to keep us safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Dan McDuffie, a resident of Somerville, Mass., 5 miles from Watertown, former news reporter. Dan, anything you want to add, anything that our audience needs to know?
You know, just be aware that it's a fluidic situation. The news is changing rapidly. You can't always trust what you hear right away and what's on social media. You know, one of the facts I just found out before I came on the show here with you you know, we thought this whole thing started this morning with a robbery at a convenience store. It now turns out they weren't really robbing the store. They just happened to be in the store. So the facts are still unfolding. It's a very fluidic situation. And, you know, I just say keep us all in your thoughts and prayers and, you know, definitely keep the bombing victims in your thoughts and prayers. They'll need all the support they can get.
Yeah. And may this young man turn himself in and give us some insight into what happened here so that we can prevent this in the future as well.
Let's hope so, because it would definitely be helpful to understand the why behind all this, because we really don't know right now. We can only speculate.
Yeah, very well said. Dan, thanks a lot for the report.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Great to hear from you. Thank you very much. Remarkable. Steve in River Forest, Illinois, listening to WCPT. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hey, Tom, I was just thinking, I've called about this a few times before, but I think we need to expose the neocon frame that there is an inherent conflict of interest between individual liberty and the greater good of society. I hear them implying this all of the time,
yeah,
that you're either 100% for individual liberty or you're the enemy of individual liberty. And anytime you disagree with that in their frame, you are an enemy of individual liberty.
Yeah, and Franklin Roosevelt, I mean, you know, in his 1932 acceptance speech, he said, a necessitous man is not a free man. He made it very, very clear. You're not free if you're hungry. You're not free if you're unemployed. You're not free if you're homeless. You're not free if you don't have access to health care. And, you know, his Four Freedoms speech, his Second Bill of Rights, all the work he did throughout, and I think people of that generation understood that. And now we've got this new generation of people who grew up reading Ayn Rand, and somehow they think that it's this polar thing. And I agree with you that freedom comes from having a foundation, having some soil to put our roots into. You know,
Rand is the philosopher of the false dilemma, that you have to choose between egoism or altruism. It's all or nothing.
Right.
If whichever side you choose automatically makes you the enemy of the other. You're either completely for individual liberty or you're completely for collectivism.
Yeah.
And there's no in-between.
Yeah. And
regardless of the fact that the top 10 economies on this planet are all mixed economies.
Yeah, absolutely. And ours has been more mixed at the times that it's worked best, and the more it becomes libertarian, as it did during the Gilded Age, as it did during the Roaring Twenties, and as it has since Reagan, the more it becomes libertarian, the less it works well for everybody, except the very, very, you know, the top, you know, few hundred billionaires. It's really quite remarkable. And I think you're so right. And every time one of these guys uses the word freedom, it would be so cool if we could figure out a way that every American would think, okay, what does freedom mean? Freedom means that I will never be homeless. I will, you know, if I'm sick, I will be cared for. If I am hungry, I will be fed, and I have the freedom to work, and I have the freedom to make a lot of money or a little bit of money, whatever it may be. All of those things are on the spectrum of freedom, rather than, as you point out, this false dichotomy or this false polarity, this false choice. Steve, thanks for the call, and thanks for listening to WCPT. 27 minutes past the hour. We'll see what's going on. We'll update you after the break on what's going on in Boston, although, as you just heard from Dan McDuffie, Boston Reporter, it seems like it's just, you know, we're just waiting.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And it's Anything Goes Friday, so if you want to talk about anything from the Stock Act to Republicans cutting profits, give us a shot. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. The situation in Boston still static. We're, you know, waiting to hear what's going on and where it's going, as they say. Todd in Brook Park, Ohio. Hey, Todd, thanks for calling. What's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I had originally wanted to pose this question to Senator Sanders, but hopefully we can get the conversation started. Maybe this can transfer into next week. In light of the occurrences this week in Boston, I would hope that Congress would find a renewed appetite to try to come up with legislation that would mark gunpowder to make it more easily traceable. Because in the absence of all these cameras, I don't know how they would have been able to find these guys.
Yeah. And a little history here. There are these compounds, chemicals called taggants. They tag things. And back in the 80s, there was a law passed during the Reagan era, as I recall. There was a law passed that actually, I think I may have the details of this. Hang on just a second here. Austerity stuck.
I think they originally tried to do it in the 70s, but.
Yeah. Apparently not. Anyway, I was supposed to have for our TV show tonight, and I thought the details were on here, but it's not. These tag-ins, yeah, it might have been the 70s. In any case, they are required by law in plastic explosive. So if somebody sets off a bomb with plastic explosive, the police can simply look at the explosive residue, find the tag-ins, and track it back to the manufacturer and probably even to the lot or you know, roughly the time that it was manufactured, and thus follow a chain of custody that, you know, may or may not involve theft or black markets, you know, would make it more difficult. But at least there's some chain of custody there that you can track it back where it came from. The NRA, however, intervened. Originally, this would have also covered smokeless powder, black powder, gunpowder. And the NRA intervened and said, no, that you can't do that because that would make it possible to track bullets. And so it was excluded by law from these things. And so there are no tag-ins in the kinds of explosives, the black powder explosives, that you, like this bomb was apparently made out of, that where you just, like you buy a bunch of shotgun shells and empty them out, that kind of thing. No tag-ins. And so, and in fact, there was on Lawrence O'Donnell's show the other night, he had a guy who was with the ATF, Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, and Explosives now, who was with them back in the day when the NRA successfully lobbied against this. And the guy said, you know, we all looked at each other here at the ATF and said, you know, the bomb makers now have a lobby. And, yeah, they do. It's Wayne Littlepeter and or LaPierre and his group, the NRA. They have lobbied to not have tag-ins in explosives other than plastic explosives, which nobody uses for guns. And I think that there's something just fundamentally wrong with that. So, but, you know, if you can't even get a simple background check about whether somebody's a wife beater or has been adjudicated criminally insane before they can buy a gun through this Congress, you're not going to get something like tag-ins on gunpowder through. It's just such a sad commentary on how the weapons manufacturing industry, and let's make no mistake about it, this is not the NRA, this is not some sportsman's group, this is the weapons manufacturing industry is putting all of this money into this. And how much power they have in Congress. So, Todd, thanks for the call. Excellent point. Kathy in Etna, Wyoming. Hey, Kathy, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Let me preface my question with a few brief examples. My mind is so full and cluttered with all of these things I hear about America, from books and documentaries to watching C-SPAN. But here's a few examples. But starting at the very beginning, we didn't keep our word with many treaties with American Indians.
Right.
We've helped to overthrow governments in other countries like Iran, Argentina, Haiti. We've lied about weapons of mass destruction. We've lied about using killer drones. We're cutting down 500 mountains in West Virginia for coal. Pollution problems are never disclosed to us, or rarely. We have to fight to get the information. GMO foods are bad. They sneak laws into the bills that are put before Congress. Banksters continue to grow.
I got that. Kathy, you're ruining my day here.
I'm sorry.
I think all of us, have our lists, and I don't disagree. What's the question?
Here's my question, because it's never ending. Can you give me three great things about America?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We were the original experiment that came out of the Enlightenment, and we continue to be an evolving experiment. And I think that's a pretty marvelous thing. We were, you know, it was in the 1630s, as I recall, 1634, I think it was, that Leviathan, Thomas Hobbes published Leviathan, the tutor to Charles I, if my recollection is correct. And suggested that, hey, maybe it's possible people could actually govern themselves. Radical idea in 1634. A century later, half a century later, in the 1670s, John Locke, in his second treatise on government, said, yeah, not only can people govern themselves, but they actually have an inalienable right to life, liberty, and property. And he said property back then because the king owned everything, right down to your underwear. I mean, you know, literally, there was no private property. And so that was a radical concept. And this is the 1670s. Fast forward 100 years, the 1770s, and a bunch of people got together in this country, and yes, it was imperfectly done, and they screwed the Indians and created a holocaust for both Native Americans and African Americans as slaves, and they weren't too nice to women, and you know, we can go through the long list, but they said, let's try this thing out, this idea that we can govern ourselves. And it was imperfectly done. But the good news, I think, my first in my list, the good news, I think, is that with every time we've tried and failed, we have come back better and stronger at having a functional democracy. Our government was horribly corrupted by slavery in the 1820s, the 1830s, the 1840s. John Quincy Adams, after he was president in the late 1820s, early 1830s, came back and ran for the House of Representatives and won a seat in the House of Representatives. This is John Adams' son, just so he could passionately argue against slavery. And that, you know, led obviously, you know, that and the Dred Scott decision, the Roger Taney Court in 1856, as I recall, led right straight to the Civil War. The whole world looked at us and said, okay, the Civil War, this country's only, you know, four generations old, it's 80 years old, that's going to be the end of that experiment. So much for John Locke, so much for Thomas Hobbes, so much for the thinkers of the Enlightenment like Ben Franklin and Thomas Jefferson. They were all wrong. We should stick with our kings. At that time, there were only a couple of countries that had even dared to imitate us. And we came through the Civil War, and we expanded rights. And then we had the great, you know, crash, I guess, the long, what was referred to as the Long Depression from 1870 to around 1900, Robert Barron's called it the Gilded Age, but for most Americans, it was the worst depression America has ever had, far worse than the Great Depression of the 1930s. And we came out of that with a progressive movement and a union movement that was substantial. And we got direct election of senators, and women got the vote. And then the crazies took over again in 1920, and for 9 years ran this country, and you know, ran it into the ground again, as always, the Harding, Coolidge and Taft, excuse me, the Harding, Coolidge and Hoover administrations, Warren Harding running on the platform of less government in business, more business in government. And you know, again, we had another bubble and then it crashed. And out of that crash came the New Deal. And so every step along the way, things have gotten better. It looks like we're going backwards again. And you know, those of us old enough to remember what America was like before Reaganomics, we have, particularly for anybody who makes less than $1 million a year, we have gone backwards substantially in a lot of ways. On the other hand, we've also gone forward in a lot of ways. So I would say, you know, number one, I think the experiment of America is still alive and vital, even though it's under a lot of stress. And those stresses, I think, are good things, because when we break from the stress, or when we freak out from the stress, or when we react to the stress, we come back stronger. So is that an okay first one for you, Kathy?
Yes, but it's history. What today?
Okay. Well, I see it today. I see today, right now, I'm seeing it in the gay rights movement. I'm seeing it in the fact that you've got a generation now that doesn't see color the way that the two generations ago did. I'm seeing that in the Move to Amend movement, the movement, you know, the reaction to the Supreme Court. I'm seeing the Occupy movement. I'm seeing a lot of positive and forward motion in the United States. The fact that, you know, most Americans, when you poll them on topics, are very, very progressive, even though our politics have been captured by big money. I think that that's going to fail and collapse. Secondly, I think that, you know, Americans have always celebrated smart, and I think that that's a wonderful thing, and we need to get back to that and stop thinking that, you know, getting to smart is having private schools. You know, we need to reinvest in our public education system. And third, I've always seen us as a nation of optimists, and I've been in nations where everybody's pessimistic and nobody thinks there's any future. That's not this country. So that would be my three, Kathy, for what it's worth. I hope it's a help. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be back in just a moment. Tom Hartman here with you 15 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. 10 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you and Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service, TalkRadioNews.com, brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com. On the line with us, Victoria, what's the latest?
Thank you very much, Tom. I don't have very much new to tell you about the manhunt for the surviving suspect bomber Joe Kartsianiev. We really don't know much more than probably what you've heard in the last couple of months. He is missing somewhere, believed somewhere in the Boston area. Boston is shut down, costing, by the way, it's estimated $1 billion a day. And they are looking for him. There's, you know, interesting speculation about why somebody with a Chechen background would be involved in this, and is this anything to do with Chechnya? Is it to do with his brother having left the country for 6 months and perhaps become radicalized? Or is it to do with something completely different? And the fact is that there's so much that we don't know that anything that I report at this point would be pure speculation, so I'm not going to.
Okay. And we'll leave it at that. I did a fair amount of speculating myself at the top of the hour, and that's
your job.
Well, to some extent, yeah. It's going to come back to haunt me. I've got callers on the line who want to take me to task for it. So we will at the beginning of the next hour, we're going to have a report from a reporter in Boston, Barry Nolan, just give us a sense of what it feels like there. He's a professor of journalism, has been keeping us up to date, but beyond that, yeah. What else is going on in the world?
Well, there are other things going on. There was the first hearing in the Senate Judiciary Committee today about the immigration bill that the Senate Gang of Eight dropped at 2 a.m. on Wednesday, the 844-page bill. Senate Judiciary Chairman Pat Leahy, Democrat of Vermont, not happy. He says it fails to live up to our values. And he says this bill includes what some are calling triggers, but I'm concerned could long delay green cards for those we want to make full and contributing participants in our society.
Yeah.
So he thinks that it's going to take too long for people to get green cards. He also says, I cannot help but question whether spending billions more on a fence between the U.S. and Mexico is really the best use of taxpayer dollars. He's also concerned that same-sex couples won't have the same access to family visas as heterosexual couples, which is something that gay groups had hoped would be in the bill but was left out of the bill. They're now hoping that that may get into the bill at a later committee stage.
Yeah, but I agree with him on these triggers, and the biggest one, of course, is being that the southern state governors certify that the fence is just fine. It's insane for us to build the Berlin Wall all over again, only this time call it the Mexico Wall. It's just insane.
It's not going to work.
Yeah, no, it's
also, tomorrow is the third anniversary of the Deepwater Horizon explosion, which killed 11 men and caused nearly 5 million barrels of oil to spill into the Gulf over nearly 3 months. And the former members of President Obama's former oil spill commission say that Congress has yet to pass one piece of legislation to make drilling safer.
Wow.
Former Florida Senator Bob Graham says it has failed. They've given it a D grade. They've been giving grades to the various parties. They gave the administration a B. They say that across the board, interagency cooperation and coordination has markedly improved. However, the executive office of the president seems to be paying less attention. As a result, proposed regulations are getting hung up and decisions postponed.
Mm-hmm.
The oil and natural gas industry got a B-minus because industry has significantly expanded the quality and quantity of oil spill response equipment. But it warns, the risks will only increase as drilling moves into deeper waters with harsher, less familiar conditions. Delays in taking the necessary precautions threaten new disasters, and their occurrence could in turn seriously threaten the nation's energy security.
Yeah, and none of this addresses the fact that all of this is based on 19th century fossil fuels when we have right now available to us 21st century renewables.
Right.
Yeah. So.
But nobody's taking that seriously.
Yeah. Well, at least not in the United States. Portugal got 70% of their energy from renewables for a three-month period, just ending last month.
The United States is just not there.
Yeah. Well, we're moving there. 20% of the electricity in Texas now is made by wind.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it is. Texas. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
MIT physics professor Ernest Moniz, he with the crazy hair, was voted out of the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee yesterday, 12-1.
Whoa. Because of what?
Only one Republican, Senator Tim Scott, voted against him, not because he didn't like him, but he's got problems with President Obama's budget request. So he voted against him because he was ticked off. He got Senator John Barrasso, Mike Lee. Got Mike Lee. You don't get Mike Lee to vote yes on anything, Republican of Utah. Mike Lee even voted no yesterday on the mental health amendment on guns.
Right, right.
Along with Rand Paul.
Right.
Two out of 97 senators.
Yeah, amazing.
So Moniz looks like he will go through and will be the next energy secretary. Also, 12 bodies have been recovered at the Texas blast site in West after a fiery explosion ripped through the heart of this close-knit Texas town after a fertilizer plant exploded.
Mm-hmm.
Senator John Cornyn, Republican of Texas, said today 60 people are unaccounted for.
Wow.
Now, that doesn't mean they're dead. They are checking to see whether any of them are in hospitals, but
right.
They are missing completely.
Or just out of town. But this was a whole lot more explosive than what Tim McVeigh had, and it was the same type.
Right.
And so it may be that there are bodies that were just incinerated, that were vaporized.
Right. They may never be found.
Amazing. Victoria Jones, the Talk Radio News Service, brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com. Victoria, thank you.
Have a nice weekend.
Thank you. You too. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and Barry Nolan on the line with us, former newscaster with WBZ-TV in Boston, professor of journalism at BU, Boston University. His website, or the website for the documentary, is nowayoutbutone.com. Barry, do you want to just give us a little bit of, on that documentary before you go into this, or is that just for some other time in some other way?
Oh, we're happy to talk about it some other time at length, but very briefly, it's a documentary that's about how the American family court system is really failing to do the job it should to keep children safe when there are credible allegations of child sexual abuse or physical abuse or domestic violence, and that all too often children are ordered by the courts to go live with the very person that has been hurting them and will continue to hurt them.
I see.
And it's something we need to fix.
Indeed, it's important stuff. So you're in Boston. What's the latest?
I'm in Boston. Boston is a pretty sleepy town today because people have been up all night watching this gripping drama unfold in their backyards, but watching it, most of us, on television because the town has been shut down. In neighborhoods and towns like mine, the town of Newton in Watertown and Cambridge and Alston, Brighton, Boston, 300,000 people are affected by the order to stay in your house. Do not go near the windows. If somebody knocks on the door, don't answer it unless it's a police officer who can show you identification. Because of all the events that unfolded last night,
the man that is on the loose someplace in one of our neighborhoods right now, or perhaps on his way to parts unknown, is a man that is capable of great violence.
What is the best guess, that he's like hiding in a closet somewhere? I mean, it seems to me that for this to have gone on this long, that either there's a negotiation going on with him, and they found him, or he's, I mean, like literally hiding under a bed, and they don't know where it is.
The word that you used at the beginning is probably a pretty good word to use, guess.
Yes.
Right now, where he is anybody's guess. There's been so much incorrect information reported about who was involved and what has happened. Your listeners have probably seen a post about how, that picture was this Brown University student that went missing last month, and he is from Sri Lanka. Or no, the person that really did it is the Saudi national that was going to be deported back to Saudi Arabia thanks to Obama's devious ways. There have been so many reports out there that were just absolutely dead wrong that it's important to preface a lot of what we say as guessing.
Yeah.
And figuring out where he is right now, that's what the police are doing right now, guessing. They're being really methodical. They're good. The last report that they made to the public was that they had gone through about 60% of the community that they wanted to check door by door. And what they're doing is SWAT teams, people with the safety off, fingers on the trigger of automatic weapons, are going door to door, pounding on the door, telling people, demanding they come to the door, telling them they have to get out of the house, that they need to search for dangerous people. They go in and they look under the beds.
Right.
They look in parked cars. They look in outbuildings. So far, they haven't found him. But one of the things that has surfaced in all this has been a torrent of information, and some of it is very touching. One of the stories that surfaced today was the Jeff Bauman, that man that you probably may remember from the graphic photos of a man with a gaunt face, sort of gunpowder burns on the side of his face, who had lost both his legs below the knee. The story that Jeff Bauman may have played a role in identifying this guy.
Right, he saw him. Yeah.
Go ahead.
He saw him and described him. In fact, he had to do it in handwriting because he was so whacked by the explosion, he couldn't speak very well.
The first thing he did was gesture for pen and paper and write, "Bag." Saw them, looked me in the eye.
Wow.
And one of the other things that surfaced was this heartbreaking photo that shows that the man that is now on the run, that some people have talked about how, we've known he was a kid that was a good kid that went to Ringe in Latin school. He got athlete of the year. He was laid back. I can't imagine how he would do anything like this. What would have possessed him? And there's a picture of this man in the white hat, his profile, casually walking away, and he's in the background of a crowd, and the little boy, Martin, who's the boy that was killed, is sitting there in front of him, sort of climbing on that metal railing they have to keep spectators off the route, and there, on the ground, less than a yard away from Martin, is the bag with the bomb in it. That this man, just casually walking away, had dropped there, and was casually walking away, where he was going to blow up children.
That's amazing.
I don't know what he was like in high school, but I know that whoever would do that is not a good man.
Yeah, yeah. I'm with you. The Jeff Bauman, by the way, the lead story over at the Think Progress blog is he is one of the 1.9% of Massachusetts residents who does not have health insurance. One of the guys who fell between the cracks, he was about to start school, and once he got into school, he would have qualified, but he was just a few weeks short of it. And so there's a Bucks for Bauman at the GoFundMe.com crowdfunding service. People are trying to raise money to pay for this guy's medical expenses. It's like, only in America.
The thing right now is some of the things that you see in this, just, yeah. you can't help but just.
Now, the other thing that I'm curious your take on here, we're talking with Barry Nolan, former newscaster at WBZ, currently professor of journalism at Boston University. The headline, the screaming headline at the Drudge Report, and I think, you know, we need to keep in mind Janet Napolitano's comments that she wouldn't put Drudge in the same sentence with Forbes, but the screaming headline is the Arabic word for jihad, and underneath it says Boston Jihad, and there's all kinds of links to Temerian, if I'm saying it right, Tsarnaev. The older, the black hat fellow, the 26-year-old brother, the older brother, apparently being a big fan of right-wing, right-wing is maybe the wrong phrase, a fundamentalist Muslim preacher, etc. On the other hand, you've got people going, hey, you know, these guys are from Chechnya. There's this Chechen separatist movement, but, you know, they're trying to separate from Russia. What does that have to do with Boston? Any thoughts on any of all of this stuff?
One of the interesting things that's surfaced about the now-deceased bomber is that he was married and had a 3-year-old daughter. And he'd been involved in domestic violence calls. Police had responded to domestic violence. And he is a man, he's also a man that said he had absolutely no friends in America. The thing that one cannot help but guess, speculate about somebody that would do this, that would blow up innocent strangers who never meant him any harm, is that somebody that would engage in domestic violence and that would perpetrate something like this, it's merely an accident of birth, and whatever happened to come across his way, he would have been an appalling jerk, whether he was exposed to the Red Army, whether he was exposed to the Symbionese Liberation Army, whether he was exposed to the Ku Klux Klan, or whether he was exposed to Muslim fundamentalism.
Yeah.
There is something so badly wired in his brain, so amiss in his heart, that whatever he gives or pretends to be the motive for what he did, it's merely an accident, it's inconsequential.
Very, very well said, Barry, and I think it's true right across the board and that whole spectrum. Barry Nolan, nowayoutbutone.com. Thank you, Barry.
It's a pleasure.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back. It's Anything Goes Friday. Back with your calls right after this, 16 minutes past the hour on the Tom Hartman Program. So, welcome back to Anything Goes Friday. And Jerry in Hartville, Missouri. Hey, Jerry, you want to disagree with me about something?
In a sense, Tom, thank you for taking the call. Before asking you a question, I just wanted to, as religion seems to be taking a bit of a hit and Bill Maher needs to listen, I'll just simply cite Galatians 5, 22 through 23, Matthew 23. 2:37 through 40, James 1:25 through 27, Isaiah 1:17, and Job 29:12 through 17. And have you been able to study since we talked on the preamble, and what do you think?
On the preamble, no, I don't. I don't believe that I have. On that collection of quotes, that's, you know, to hear James and Job in the same, what's the thread that runs through all those? You've got my curiosity aroused here.
The very basic, like, fundamentals of Christian religion.
Okay.
And so, that will put it in point. And anyway, I'll probably be continuing in doing something for law again, so you have a nice day and maybe talk to you later.
Oh, okay. All right, Jerry.
Thank you.
All right. I didn't realize you just wanted to quote some Bible verses. I thought that there was actually going to be... My point was, you know, 1995, Eric Rudolph. He says, you know, America is becoming a godless socialist state because of our affiliation with the UN. So let's blow up the Olympics. 1996. 1995 was the Oklahoma City bombing. 2009, the shooting of the guard at the Holocaust Museum. 2012, the Sikh temple attacks. I mean, you know, we've got some, well, not obviously 9/11. We've got some problems with religion and violence. Now, the fact of the matter is that at least in most of Western society, they're small compared to where they were in the 14th century, you know, when we were doing the Crusades, or the 15th and 16th and 17th centuries when, you know, they were burning witches at the stake and things like that. But still, you know, I think we've got a problem here with religious fundamentalism of all stripes. That said, we'll find out if that this plays any role in the Boston bombing or not, and if so, what, as time comes on. And I'll leave that to the news people. Patrick in Seattle, you want to talk about CISPA?
Yeah, Tom, I wanted to talk about, you know, CISPA. You know, a lot of my friends on the Internet are very, you know, worried about it's threatening the amendment of the Constitution. I just wanted to see the progressive take on it. Whenever both libertarians and progressives agree on an issue, especially a civil liberties issue, it's generally a big idea or a big, big deal.
Yeah, I agree. Just like, you know, by supporting Rand Paul for his stunt. It was a stunt, but nonetheless, his filibuster stunt about drones. CISPA, and please correct me if I'm wrong on this. I do not represent myself as an authority on this. I've read enough news stories to have a familiarity with it, but I have not read the legislation or the really detailed analysis that I've seen out there. I just have not, frankly, had the time to read on places like CNET and the EFF site and the Epic site. The, you know, some of the groups that are very involved in internet freedom and privacy issues. But, this is the computer. What's the acronyms? Do you remember what the acronym stands for? It's the I is internet, isn't it?
I think it's, cyber intelligence. I knew it like a minute ago.
Yeah.
Cyber intelligence,
something like Security Protection Action. Protection Act.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And the purported purpose of this is for both businesses, individuals, and government in the United States to be able to identify when the evil Chinese or, you know, fill in the blanks are trying to hack into our systems and steal our secrets or our knowledge or our money. And, and under that rubric, they're going to make it very, very difficult for anybody to do anything on the internet that is anonymous. And frankly, without anonymity, we would never have had the Boston Tea Party. And which is not, you know, which is not to say that I'm a fan of, you know, revolutions overthrowing governments. But there's a lot of political action. I'd say, frankly, without anonymity, we probably would have seen the civil rights movement in the United States under assault. We would have seen, you know, it never would have gotten as far as it did. The women's movement. I mean, certainly the anti-Vietnam War movement. Anonymity is part of the DNA of America, and it's woven into the woof and weave of certainly the First and Fourth Amendments. And I have grave concerns about CISPA in this regard. And I don't recall the name of the congressman. Some Republican congressman yesterday said, the only people worried about CISPA are 14-year-olds, right? Implying that, you know, it's 14-year-old boys who want to download internet porn or free video games. And this
Mike
is Rogers, a whole lot more than that.
Yeah. I don't know. I have a lot of concerns with it. And I just wanted to ask you, what do you think is the possibility of it being voted down in the Senate? Because Google and a bunch of the anti-SOPA companies that helped the Internet shoot that bill down
we will see, because what they've done is they've fine-tuned this thing so it will work to the benefit of for-profit companies. And in the past, some for-profit companies were, you know, when it was CISPA and SOPA and all the other, you know, the previous acronyms, you had, you know, the conflict of interest between, for example, Google and Microsoft. Now it seems like the really powerful forces are lining up on this thing, the people, the big money, the folks. So I'm very concerned about it. I think it's going to be civil libertarians, the Bernie Sanderses and the Rand Pauls. Who are going to, I don't know what Bernie's position is on this, but I shouldn't say Bernie, but it's going to be the, as you say, you know, the progressives and the libertarians who are going to be speaking out the loudest, and it's not just 14-year-old kids. I will do a better job of educating myself and all of you on this next week, and we need to continue on. Thank you, Pat.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And thank you, Patrick, for listening to our affiliate KBCS there in Seattle. We'll be right back. 28 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And let me know if my executive summary of the World Bank's report on climate change is printing correctly or not. Would you, Shana? Only me, yes. Because I think I hit the print button too early. And so if it's coming out right, ask Danielle to let me know. And if it's coming out wrong, I need to hit the print button again. the things that we read around here, right? It's pretty. Okay, good. Thank you. This 100-page, you know, when the World Bank comes out and says, you know, the sky is falling, or variations on it. Actually, what they're saying is the sky is too full of carbon dioxide. You really, really need to take that seriously. Craig in Crestview, Florida. Hey, Craig, you think that the people in Boston are wishing they had guns right now? Seriously?
I think probably if you're sitting at home cowering in your house right now and you don't have a gun, you're probably a little bit concerned. But let me real quickly tell you, it's the new Madrid.
I think that's nonsense, Craig. I think if you're sitting in your house without a gun, you're probably figuring your probabilities of having a suicide in that house are much lower. The probabilities of having a child kill himself or herself or a friend are much lower. Your probabilities of your house being robbed for somebody wanting to steal your gun are much lower. And the probability of you being involved in gun violence is much lower. And I don't get your logic.
Well, I think again, if you're sitting in your house cowering in fear right now, and a whole city's been brought to its knees, actually several cities. Yeah.
The DA in what was it, Colorado? Who just got assassinated? Texas. This guy, he's army trained. He's a sharpshooter. He's got a carry permit. He's got weapons of his own. And, a guy that he sent off to jail, apparently, decided that he was going to break into this guy's house and kill him. The guy breaks into his house, kills the guy's wife, and then kills him. He had a gun. You really think that a gun is like some kind of magic shield? I mean, this is like magical thinking. This is like the 14-year-olds with their video games. I got a gun. It's going to protect me. I'm sorry. 99% of the time, you are not standing looking at the person who is going to assault you holding a gun with the safety off and your finger on the trigger. 99% of the time, you're sitting on the toilet. You're watching TV. You're laying on the floor. You're in bed sound asleep. You're talking with your wife, you're on the phone, you're doing something completely different, you're not standing there with a gun in your hand. And if you are in Boston, sitting around 10, 12 hours a day, holding your gun, rocking back and forth like it's a pacifier, you got a serious mental health problem. Your turn, Craig.
You know that there are 96,000 women raped a year, and fewer than 3% of those involved use of guns, and if women had guns, maybe there'd be fewer rapes.
Maybe there'd be a whole lot more dead people.
Yeah, rapists.
No, there'd be a whole lot more. There'd be a whole lot more dead women who accidentally shot themselves with their guns. That's guns that you are far more likely to shoot yourself or a friend by accident than you are to stop a crime if you own a gun, unless you're a police officer. It is absolutely true.
There's been 13 million new gun registrations in the last 6 months.
Right. It shows how effective when you've got a multi-billion-dollar industry that funnels $25 million through a front group for lobbying, and you got a multi-billion-dollar industry pumping out propaganda and fear to people whose IQs are just slightly lower than room temperature, you have just demonstrated how successful that can be. The tobacco industry pulled that off 20 years ago. The gun industry is doing it now, and they're doing it, frankly, with many of the exact same people.
Has there been an increase of suicides, murders, and accidental deaths corresponding to that $13 million additional guns?
Well, let's wait a year and look at the statistics.
My
guess would be that there absolutely will be. In fact, I'd be willing to bet money if I was a betting man that there will be. I'll bet you without the money, and we can have this conversation a year from now when the statistics come out. But what the one thing that we do know is that the greatest predictor of somebody committing suicide with a gun is that there's a gun in the house, and that there's 11,000 of those suicides a year, and that most of the, many of those people, maybe not most, but many of those people would not have committed suicide if they didn't have easy access to a gun, suicide being the most common form of gun violence in the United States.
You know that in the United States, our suicide rate is lower than most of the Scandinavian nations by quite a bit, and that's even with guns, and they have strict gun control. People that are going to kill themselves are going to kill themselves, and the 20,000 gun deaths from suicide.
The suicide rates in the Scandinavian countries, Craig, are an absolute anomaly. First of all, it's not all the Scandinavian countries. It's, as I recall, two of them. And it is countries that are way, way, way up in the north. They have suicide rates that correspond, by the way, with suicide rates in northern Alaska. And the best guess is it's got nothing to do with guns or not guns. It's got to do with something called seasonal affective disorder. People need sunlight to produce melatonin and serotonin to have that balance in their bodies going on. And when you live in an area where 4 or 5 months out of the year, the sun only shows for an hour or two a day, it causes a form of depression that does lead to suicide. Yeah, but that's got nothing to do with guns.
Suicide rates are similar to the rest of Germany and France. They're not off by that much, even though we have a lot more guns. So the idea
people are much more likely to commit suicide with a gun. Craig, do you want to do dueling statistics here? I mean, is that what you called about?
Sure.
Yes.
Sure, I could duel statistics with you all day. You know, when you talk about. When you demagogue guns,
you literally, Craig, hang on just a second. Shano's sitting here with headphones on. I just have an IFB. I'm having a hard time hearing you, but Shano can hear you really well. He says, you've got somebody in the background feeding you statistics? Really?
No, I'm just driving my car.
Yeah, there is.
But having been a victim of violent crime, I kind of know them. I'm sorry, baby.
Oh, it's your kid in the background. I see. My apologies, Craig.
In the car seat.
I called you out wrong. Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, if you've been a victim of a violent crime, I can understand. You know, I understand what post-traumatic stress disorder is. I understand. You know, people react.
I'm gonna have to go because she is upset. I've got her video playing wrong in the back
okay.
of the car.
Okay, Craig. We will live to debate another day. Thank you for the call.
All right.
And,
thank you.
Yeah, indeed. Mark in Kearney, Nebraska. Hey, Mark. What's up?
Hey, Tom, this is great. The first time I ever tried to call into this show, and here it is. Great. I think the Lord wanted me to get through to you.
Uh-oh.
And I was just telling the young lady, I was born on an Army post.
Right.
My father was retired as Lieutenant Colonel in the Army. He was in both wars. He was in Pork Chop Hill in Korea. In fact, he was one of the last six to get off that hill.
Wow.
He was nominated for the Silver Star. I was born in the Army. I had a gun in my hand at age 8. I don't own one now, and I don't like them, and I think, you know, I wish they weren't around. But let me tell you something here. I am very, very afraid of this government and the FEMA camps and everything I see that it looks like it's not the gun.
Mark, there are no FEMA camps.
I mean,
Mark, I'm serious. There's no FEMA camps.
No,
the photos that you've seen.
The public being disarmed.
Mark, nobody's trying to disarm the public, number one. And number two, there's no FEMA camps. What you have seen are decommissioned prisons, you know, old warehouses. I mean, please go to Snopes.com, right? There have been, you know, serious journalists who have gone out there and said, you know, find this stuff for me. Would you please, you know, show it to me, to the people who are running around yelling about it.
What about 9/11, though? I mean, how in the heck could anybody not know a controlled demolition when they see one? My dad's a demolition expert. If buildings would fall down that easy, they wouldn't spend millions of dollars to take them down. Boom, 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 boom. I mean, and since I know that was a false flag, everything has got to be...
If this is your worldview, that the government is absolutely evil and everything they're doing is they're out to get you and they're out to fool us all and they're lying to us and they're going to take away your guns and they're going to, then why worry about their taking away your guns? Because they're going to do it anyway. Why not just, like, you know, have a drink and watch some internet porn, you know?
Well, I don't drink, for one thing. That I know you weren't talking about me. I quit drinking 15 years ago.
Okay, but you get my joke. I mean, it's like if you genuinely take seriously that we are that screwed, that our government is that evil, and that they've got us, totally.
Well,
the
700 military bases.
Then what do you propose to do about it?
Hey, look, Tom, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not worried about anything because I know I'm an immortal being and I'm living forever, so I'm not worried at all. But it's just I see the government does lie about everything, and I was for Obama.
I'm not saying the government doesn't lie. I just think generally when they do, it's for stupid reasons.
I'm terrified for everyone else. Yeah. That doesn't have the peace that I have.
Mark, this is the United States of America. Our government is us. That government bureaucrat that Glenn Beck likes to yell about probably lives next door to you. The people who are making the laws, you get to pick them. You can even be one of them. You know, I just don't get this anti-American rhetoric. I just don't get it.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Yeah, it started with Reagan. Well, it started long before Reagan, I guess, with Daddy Coke, you know, and the John Birch Society. But Reagan, the first president of the United States to say the government is the problem. Really? Hey, thanks so much to our show director, Louise Hartman, to my executive producer, Sean Taylor, to our associate producers, Shane Farnan and Danielle Gilday, to our video director, Jim Javinsky, to our writer-researcher, Andrew Campbell and Nate Sweet, to Alva Goldberg for video production, to our webmasters, Nigel Peacock and Jamie Holly, to our business manager, Ron Hartenbaum, to all the people at the various groups and companies that syndicate this program, Dial Global on the commercial side, Pacifica Radio, Coast to Coast, and around the world on the non-commercial side, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, CRN Network on cable television, Free Speech TV Network on Dish Network, on DirecTV satellite providers, all the cable companies that carry our show, Comcast, Manhattan Neighborhood Network, and others around the country, all the great folks at Free Speech TV and RT TV who work on the big picture, to our newsletter editor, Sue Nethercutt, to the folks in our chat room, hey, to Ellen Ratner and Victoria Jones and everyone at the Talk Radio News Service, to Jay Goodman Tamboli for tech support, to our affiliates, radio, TV, cable, everything, our sponsors, and to you for supporting our program. Thank you. It's genuinely appreciated. Jeff in Denver, listening on iTunes. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Yeah, at the founding of this country, we were very concerned about the tyranny of the masses, and it was a big discussion. Well, I think in our protection from the tyranny of the masses, we've actually created, or tyranny of the majority, I should say, we've created a tyranny of the minority.
Certainly in the Senate.
Excuse me?
Certainly in the Senate.
Yeah, in the Senate, and that what's happened there. But the Senate, you know, everything has to go through there as far as any legislation.
Yeah.
So we've stopped basically all legislation, and what we have is a minority of the people. I mean, those types of people who are the types that blow themselves up with everyone else, where they are so wedded to their ideas, they'll take themselves and everyone else down.
Right.
And so we have created a much worse thing than a tyranny of the majority now.
Yeah.
Because it's a minority of the people that will take the entire country down, whereas tyranny of the majority, at least it's a majority of the people.
I agree. And when the House of Representatives is controlled by the Republicans, yet they got a minority of the votes in the last election when a number of Republicans who represent, you know, less than 30%, arguably less than 25% of all of the United States, can stop legislation in the United States Senate. I'm absolutely with you. And the ultimate tyranny of the minority, in my opinion, is the Supreme Court. And, you know, going back to Marbury versus Madison and you know my thoughts on that. Jeff, I know that you've read some of my books. Do you have a copy of Rebooting the American Dream?
No, actually, that's one I don't have.
Okay, well, cool, because Shane just said to me that he thought that you were our winner today. He wanted to select you to. So we are going to send you a copy of Rebooting the American Dream, 11 Ways to Rebuild Our Country, courtesy of Stamps.com, if we may.
Well, thank you,
Jeff. Let me put you on hold. Tell Danielle he's on line 5, and we will get a book out to you. And thank you for your thoughtful comment there, Jeff. Marty in Evergreen Park, Illinois, listening on WCPT. Hey, Marty, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Hey, good afternoon and happy Friday to you and everyone there.
Thank you.
I just wanted to remind everyone that the words well-regulated are, like, in the Second Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people forget that.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that I interpret the Second Amendment kind of in a modern day sort of sense. I know what historically it was drafted for, but I think it just gives us the right to have police departments, right? To have a well-regulated group of people that gather together to defend the laws that we agree are good for the common people. And they're allowed to be armed in order to basically uphold our laws and our rights. And I don't think that it means that everybody should be going around with guns for no reason.
Yeah. I personally think it's an anachronism, just like the Third Amendment. The Third Amendment, you know, forbids the government from seizing your home to put soldiers in it, what's called quartering soldiers. Which was a common practice that the British did, and it offended the founders so much that they wanted to make sure that our government never did it. But, you know, I maybe during the Civil War there was some quartering of soldiers that went on, but I don't think that it's really been a problem in America. And the Third Amendment could go away, and we probably wouldn't notice it. And I think if the Second Amendment went away and individual states exercising their Tenth Amendment rights decided what their gun laws were going to be or not be, and where they were going to draw the line. Is it going to be shoulder-fired rocket, you know, launchers, or is it going to be, you know, a handgun with nine rounds in the clip, or, you know, what's that sort of thing? I don't think that it would harm this country at all. I personally think it's an anachronism. So rather than trying to reinterpret it, I think that if it is going to be interpreted, I think that the Supreme Court got it wrong the last two times, and that it really was there in order to produce what is not so much police departments, but the National Guard, the state National Guards, because it says for the security of a free state, not for the security of a free country. So it authorizes National Guards, and that those National Guards should be under state control, should be under local control, and that people can have a gun so that they can be a member of that well-regulated militia, the National Guard. And since we no longer have slavery in the United States, you know, it was originally there to protect the slave patrols as well, but, you know, we don't need that. Anyhow, Marty, excellent point. Thanks for the call. I need to move along here. We just have 1 minute left in the show this week. Gary in Granite City, Illinois, it's yours. What's up? Gary? Our 1 minute? Okay, Howard in Farwell, Michigan. You get our last minute. What's up?
I met Senator Levin at an AFSCME convention.
Yeah, Senator Carl Levin.
Yeah, and
good
he's
man.
Not going to run again.
Right.
And my belief is he might decide to run for president.
He will not. I guarantee you that he's not going
to. Joel Lieberman kind of Democrat.
Well, no, he's not that bad. Carl Levin, you know, there's been a number of positions that I've disagreed with Carl Levin on. And, in fact, one of them a few months ago I just gave him hell on the air about. But generally speaking, you know, I grew up in Michigan. I've watched Carl Levin's political career throughout much of my life and his. And I think he's a good and decent man, and he's been a good senator for the state of Michigan by and large. And I'm particularly glad that Debbie Stabenow is there. She's a good person, too. Howard, thanks for the call. And interesting speculation, but there's not a chance, there's not a snowball's chance in Hades, as they say, that Carl Levin's going to run for president. Coming up Monday, all the news and information from the weekend, including the latest developments, of course, in what's going on in Boston, which is still, we're still waiting. And we'll have a conversation about tougher gun control and saving your social safety net with author and activist Van Jones, founder of Rebuild the Dream. And don't forget, democracy begins when you show up. So it's not a spectator sport. You've got to participate. Tag you're it, pdamerica.org, movetoamend.org, free-don.com.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.